Chapter 17. Trapped. "My patience thins," Matron Sulez told Dabney nearly a year to the day after House Stewarden's elimination of House Ben Zarafez. "Matron Malice has been quiet long enough for her to be up to trouble once again, and I would not prefer that." Dabney nodded but said nothing. House Stewarden was nearing the upper echelons in rank now, soon 15th by her calculations, an amazing climb since the addition of Zacnaphane a century and a year previous. That number was significant, Dabney knew, because in that range Matron Malice would become an attractive ally for the ruling houses, mostly so that she would choose her conquests to climb higher among her enemies. At the point where House Stewarden moved into the top 15 houses, Matron Sulez's plans for House Stewarden would become much more complicated. "Your gain will be considerable, both in my house and in Jarlaxle's little gang when they are both dead," Matron Sulez added. "Not so easy a task," Dabney replied. "Oh, this time it will be," Sulez replied. "Do your part, priestess, and I will do mine. How blessed will you be to call Sulez Armgo your matron mother?" "Blessed beyond my furthest dreams, matron," Dabney replied, and it was a sincere response. She was surprised then at how difficult this task was proving to be for her emotionally, because it involved something, someone else she coveted, more than she had ever thought possible. The choice was made for her, however. If she didn't do as Matron Sulez had demanded, Dabney held no illusions that she would survive the year. "You will watch them," the withered, ancient matron Mother Bayenry told three of her children. "Closely." "The Armgos?" asked Triel, matron Mother Bayenry's eldest daughter and the second oldest child of the great woman, behind only Gromph, and who stood beside matron Mother Bayenry this day, a rarity. "Is that even their name? Are they even considered a singular family?" "They are," Matron Mother Bayenry answered curtly, her desiccated lips curling to show her old and worn teeth. When she had been younger, even El the Eternal, the matron mother of House Bayenry and of all Menzo Baranzon since beyond the memories of the oldest drow, had been considered quite beautiful, on par with Quenthal, her third daughter, who also stood before her. Other elder matrons and priestesses often remarked that Quenthal looked very much like a younger Ivanel. A pity that Quenthal couldn't think like Ivanel, Triel often thought, but would not say to anyone other than Gromph. Quenthal was Triel's closest advisor, mostly because the clever Triel could manipulate her quite easily. Quenthal served as a fine buffer between Triel and two of their other sisters, Bladen Kirst and Vendis, a pair of the cruelest and most dangerous priestesses in the city. "Are they, these Armgos, even given a rank?"
43, answered Gromph, "though many put it at 47.
"And yet there are not 15 houses in the city who could stand against the legions of House Barris and El Armgo and survive," Matron Mother Bayenry added. "Perhaps not 10.
So you would have me watch them?"
"I would have you, all three of you, and with any support you might need, watch them," the old matron mother clarified.
"What are we looking for?"
"Matron Sulez Armgo will move against some powerful house, not in a full war, but to show that she can," Gromph answered.
"So intelligent for a man,"
Matron Mother Bayenry said in open admiration of her son.
"Yes, she will."
"Matron Malice Stewarden," Gromph added.
"That would be my guess."
"And what would you have us do more than watch?" Triel pressed.
"It will not be a war," her mother replied. "It will not be anything of monumental or highly visible scale. Matron Sulez will seek to slow the ambitions of Matron Malice, likely. She is not pleased that House Stewarden finished off House Ben Zarafez. Matron Sulez was holding Matron Decleus as her big play. There were even whispers that Matron Decleese Ben Zarafez would have invited House Barris and Delarmgo to join with her, instead of simply letting them move beyond the rank of Matron Decleese's house, as so many others had. And truly, without the case, would any house lower than House Ben Zarafez pose a threat to Matron Sulez?
To the left of Triel, Quenthal began to nod, while Gromph on her right tried hard to look very bored, as if he had already sorted all of this out long ago.
"She will go after Malice's pet weapon master, no doubt," Triel reasoned. "The one who runs with Brigandierth."
Matron Mother Banry shrugged, a curious motion from her, and one that had her old shoulders crackling loudly.
"Do not be so sure of anything, for that will blind you to anything else."
"Yes, my matron mother," Triel said with a deep and respectful bow.
"And you would have us interfere with Matron Sulez's plans should we uncover them?"
"Make it harder for her, make it cost her."
Evenel the Eternal waved her three children away, and they went out into the great Bayenri compound, moving far from any curious eavesdroppers.
"It will be the weapon master," Gromp said when they were alone.
"To hear you credit me so," Triel replied, gasping as if she might swoon. "The great archmage."
Gromp scowled at her, then at Quenthal when she giggled at Triel's sarcastic taunt.
"Matron Sulez Armgo's most precious toy is not so different from Matron Malice's," Gromph explained.
"Utha Gentle," Triel agreed, nodding. "That beast."
"Except that Sulez does not play with her toy as Malice does, by all whispers," Quenthal added.
"When you speak of matrons, you title them as such," Triel scolded.
"If Sosumtu heard you, she would demand a grueling penance."
"Sosumtu isn't here, though, is she?"
Quenthal answered. They were speaking of yet another sister, the most devout Lothian of the lot, and one who was likely to someday lead Arachtinileth, the Drow Academy for Priestesses, at the very least. Of all the daughters of Matron Mother Evenel Bayenri, Sosumtu was the least seen about the house and the most knowing and powerful in the ways of Loth. She was far down in the birth order, but many quietly whispered that she, not Triel, would succeed the Matron Mother.
"But I might tell her," Gromph warned, and his expression, that typically bored and angry affect he always wore upon his face, showed that he was not casting idle threats.
The subject of the conversation reminded Triel in no uncertain terms that she should not take this task lightly. Matron Mother Bayenri was testing her here, and to fail would be dire.
"I will set eyes all about the city," she told her two co-conspirators. "I will seek word of this weapon master Zacnaphane or anything else concerning the Armgos. We three should speak daily."
"My days are filled with duty. Important duty to the city and not the house," Gromph reminded.
The other two scowled at him.
"Yes, I know," he replied to those looks, and he heaved a great sigh. "When the expected incident occurs, my actions alone will determine the outcome." He sighed again.
Triel wanted to argue with him, but in truth she suspected that he was right. Even so, she was the first priestess of House Bayenri, the oldest daughter. Not that it mattered for Gromph, for even the youngest daughter outranked him, whatever titles he might don. The Archmage's actions might certainly prove crucial, but they would be directed by Triel, and that was something she was determined never to let her older brother forget.
"You cannot know truth from lies," Dabney whispered, leaning over the table so that her voice was very soft, but so that Zacnaphane surely heard every word.
The weapon master rolled his glass about in his fingers, digesting the news. Jarlaxle had assured him that Arath Issyun had learned his lesson and any old feelings had been buried, and while he trusted Jarlaxle, as much as one could trust the mercenary, he didn't disbelieve Dabney's information. Her brother Duvon was out of House Fey Branch now and back with Brigandierth, and that one, ever a stubborn fool, had likely not forgotten the beating Zacnaphane had put on him in the alley behind this very tavern.
Duvan was whispering into Dabney's ear, no doubt, and finding her less than receptive. It would make a great deal of sense for him to turn to Arathis Yun for support.
"They will coax you unexpectedly, and when you are there, you will find an enemy where you expected a friend," Dabney told him.
"And then?" he asked as Dabney settled back into her seat.
"Stay alive, my only friend," she bade him. "I need you to stay alive."
Zacnaphane turned his eyes to his glass and didn't respond, nor did he look up when Dabney rose and left the Using My Conid. He simply sat there in silent bitterness. Having at last been allowed out of House Doerten after months of what he considered imprisonment, he had come to the tavern in search of companionship, only to find that the intrigue concerning him out here in the wild streets of Menzo Berenzon had only grown more dangerous. How sick he was of all of it, how ready to simply draw his blades and go to battle against anyone and everyone until he was mercifully struck down. He closed his eyes and let the dark moment of anger pass, that internal primal scream that, for but an instant, could overwhelm his every joy. A steadying breath had him leaning back in his chair, sipping his drink. He wouldn't dare partake of too much liquor, he thought, and the notion had him glancing across the floor to where Harbinder was wiping clean the bar. The man noticed Zacnaphane's stare and returned it with a nod, holding up a bottle. Zacnaphane shook his head, and Harbinder nodded again, miming a snap of his fingers to indicate that all Zacnaphane had to do was ask, and more would be rushed over. The weapon master was glad that he hadn't killed this one, and not because of the excellent service Harbinder had since provided. No. Zacnaphane's sense of relief went much deeper than that. He rose from his chair and moved over to take a seat at the bar, which was mostly empty.
"Something else, perhaps?" Harbinder asked.
Zacnaphane held up his hand.
"I must be back to House Doerten soon. It would not do for me to stagger across the balcony." "Or into Matron Malice's bedroom, eh?"
the barkeep quipped with a sly grin, and Zacnaphane was happy to return it.
"To Matron Malice," he said, hoisting his drink. "The Untamed."
Harbinder tapped the bottle against the glass.
"She is all that they say?"
"And more," Zacnaphane replied. "She inflicts more wounds than a displacer cat."
"Claw or suction?"
"Yes," Zacnaphane answered, and both laughed.
When that died away, the two former enemies stared at each other from across the bar, very close. Zacnaphane felt comfortable with this new relationship he had formed. It surprised him to realize that he trusted Harbinder, but he did. Whatever plot Dabney had warned him of did not involve this man, he was certain.
"How fares Duvan Trayrock?"
Zacnaphane dared to ask. The question seemed to surprise the barkeep.
"He's a better man than he was when he entered House Fay Branch, by all accounts," he at last replied.
"And why do you suppose that might be?"
Harbinder shrugged.
"He has seen the inside of a noble house, with the constant plotting and backstabbing and front-stabbing, but without the disaster of our own old house. I think perhaps that the experience widened Duvan's perspective and has given him a better appreciation of Bregan de Earth."
Zacnaphane nodded and certainly understood. How he wished that Malice would set him free as Matron Beerton had released Duvan.
"And what of Harbinder?" Zacnaphane asked.
"Still you doubt?"
"I did not say that."
"Implied?"
the barkeep replied.
"What of me? I am content. Perhaps more so than I ever was in the centuries I toiled in the house of Matron Howes. The priestesses would call that blasphemy."
"The priestess is no blasphemy, I agree."
It was a simple answer, but one with several implications. Harbinder was very good at that, Zacnaphane had come to learn. The man could distill a lifetime of frustration and subjugation, along with a giant pile of utter contempt, into four words. "The priestess is no blasphemy." Zacnaphane appreciated that talent.
He was glad he had chosen mercy with this one indeed. Zacnaphane meandered back across the city soon after to House Doerden and Matron Malice, and there he remained as the 10 days slipped past. And every day he rose from his bed and thought that he was a day closer to death. And that, at least, was a good thing, after all.
"Wherever is your friend?" Matron Malice asked him one day, months later.
The question was cryptic and unexpected, but Zacnaphane knew at once that Malice had to be referring to Jarlaxle, who had not been about House Doerden in many months, perhaps more than a year.
"The last I heard of him, he was out of Menzo Berenzon."
"He has returned 2 10 days ago, so say the whispers, but he has not returned to Zacnaphane," Malice remarked, seeming intrigued.
"He knows that you will not let me out, so I am of no use to him."
"Part of your value to me is that you remain of use to him. I would keep Bregan de Earth friendly to House Doerden."
Zacnaphane shrugged helplessly.
"Finish your lessons with Deneen, and you may have a night free," Malice agreed. "One night."
"One night, and more if Jarlaxle has work for me."
Matron Malice scowled, and Zacnaphane suppressed his grin, knowing she would concede. Kiorli seemed very much like an ordinary rat, except that his fur was much cleaner than one might expect for a critter running about the sewers, sludge, and gutters of Menzo Berenzon. To Gromph Beanry, however, Kiorli was much more than that. He was his familiar, a companion even. He was eyes where Gromph could not go, or where the Archmage didn't want to be seen. In the second alley behind Narvendel, not far from Gromph's own private mansion, Kiorli once again showed the Archmage his worth. As soon as the rat spotted the approaching drow, it had telepathically contacted the great wizard, who then wasted no time in teleporting back to the spot. Gromph silently nodded his appreciation to Triel, who was not there, for his sister had uncovered much in the 10 days since their meeting with Matron Mother Beanry, including, most importantly, this particular location. Matron Mother Beanry had privately told Gromph that if he was going to interdict an Armgo plan, as they had discussed, he should do so with a potent reminder that he was indeed the Archmage of Menzo Berenzon. Gromph would be Matron Mother Beanry's unsubtle reminder to House Barrison del Armgo and that upstart Matron Sulez that they were not a threat to the great Beanry's. As soon as he had learned of the location, Gromph had familiarized himself with every entrance, every hiding spot, every crevice along the backs of the 3 structures that formed this alleyway. Any ambushers had 4 ways to get into the alley's wide end, 1 from the street and 1 from each of the 3 buildings, through secret doors. Except that those doors weren't secret to Gromph, and he had already drawn his glyphs and runes about them. Now, invisibly, he moved about the alley enacting the magic. 1, 2, 3, and it was all he could do to keep from laughing at how beautifully diabolical and insulting his little extra-dimensional tunnels might prove. As he finished the 3rd, he heard movement from down the alley and turned to regard the approach of a man, moving stealthily and cleverly among the shadows. Gromph knew him, though not by name. He had seen this one with Jarlaxle. Bait, he figured, and as the assassin moved into the alleyway's cul-de-sac, Gromph slid past him and moved out the other way, down a mostly natural bending corridor, open to the cavern roof and out onto the street, not far from Narbendel and not far from his home. He telepathically bade Kiorli to stay nearby so that he could watch the entertainment through the eyes of his rodent friend. A few days after his unexpected and surprisingly good talk with Matron Malice, Zacnaphane got his chance, and out he went into the city, to the Brerin and the oozing Myconid. His disappointment grew as he searched the tavern, to find that neither Jarlaxle nor his lieutenants, or even Duvan Treyrock, were anywhere about. He made his way to the bar and waited for a quiet moment when he was able to speak with Harbendaire alone.
"I have heard tell that Jarlaxle has returned to the city," he said.
"Aye," the barkeep quietly replied. "I've heard the same, and with a waiting word that he has been expecting you."
A messenger came to me quietly a short while before you arrived, with news that you had left House Stowerden this night and were likely on your way to the tavern.
Jarlaxle has been looking for me?
Arbindare shrugged. He informed me that Jarlaxle waits for you now in the second alley behind Narbondale, Arbindare explained. You know the place?
He told you this?
Not Jarlaxle, Arbindare clarified. The messenger. I have not seen Jarlaxle or that strange Oblodrin person who was often by his side, or Arath Asune in months.
Then who told you? Who is this messenger?
An associate, I would expect.
The hairs on the back of Zacnafane's neck tingled. Jarlaxle rarely sought clandestine meetings with him, and would normally just be in the tavern openly inviting Zacnafane to join his table.
What of Dabney? She spends almost all of her time in the house of Matron Sulez Armco. She, too, has not been about in 10 days, at least.
When did Jarlaxle return?
Another shrug. I heard he has been back in the city for 2 10-days.
And you have not seen him?
Jarlaxle is ever occupied, probably in the bed of some matron or 10.
Zacnafane nodded and offered an appreciative smile to Harbindare, who moved off to serve another customer. The weapon master sat at the bar for a long time, slowly sipping his drink and digesting the information. Something seemed wrong to him here, somewhere in the back of his mind. Much of what he had just been told seemed off. He watched Harbindare as the man went about his business, and Zacnafane became convinced as he did that the barkeep had been honest with him. But honest in reporting what he had been told, not in any truth or treachery behind it.
The second alley behind Narbondale,
Zacnafane whispered under his breath, using the verbal cue to better recall that location, a place where he had met Jarlaxle and other Brake and D'Earth associates before, though long ago. Out he went, called more by his suspicions than his sense of duty. As he neared the appointed rendezvous, he circled the area, looking for agents. He knew their haunts, particularly in areas like this, where Brake and D'Earth often met. He found no one about. Again, the hairs on the back of his neck tingled. He recalled then his last conversation with Dabney, where she had warned him of a trap, though in vague terms. Nevertheless, Zacnafane started into the alley. Its sides were lined with boxes and huge sacks, offering plenty of cover for would-be ambushers. He silently vowed to kill Harbindare if this turned out to be a trap, but then reconsidered almost immediately. The man had been sincere, he believed, and had passed along only that which he had been instructed. He wouldn't kill the messenger, but he'd certainly consider killing the messenger's messenger. The alley continued down a dozen strides, bent to the left, then back to the right, he recalled. Still, he didn't have his weapons drawn as he made his way. He was Zacnafane. His swords and their scabbards were as good as drawn. He moved along the bend, then rushed around the sharp right-hand corner to find the alley dead-ending and empty. Except that it wasn't.
"I knew it would be you," came a familiar voice.
And Arath Asune leaped down from on high, weapons drawn, landing just a couple of strides from Zacnafane, who easily spun and blocked, his blades appearing in his hands as if they had been there all along. Zacnafane could have moved right in then, pressing the man, as his parry had left him in an advantageous position. With his skill, he might have put Arath Asune on his heels and kept him there until the end, but something was wrong here. He did not advance. This was not the trap.